thanks for taking the time out of your day to do this with me. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, so I'll just quickly introduce myself personally to you. I'm a math teacher in New York City. I'm trying to help kids program.
Oh, cool. That's great.
I mean, I only have a limited knowledge of programming myself, but, you know, they have no knowledge. So anything to start them off with is good. So, you know, that's me. So okay. I'm just doing this as a side project thing. It's not.
I worked in New York City for a couple of years, so I'm a big fan of the area. I grew up in the East Coast, so, you know. That's awesome what you're doing, I think. Oh, really cool.
Can you introduce yourself and describe Whoa Dave from your point of view?
Okay. Well, my name is Jason Cirillo. I have been developing video games since 2001, maybe 2002, somewhere around there. I work for a company called Choice Provisions. We're Totally Choice on Twitter, and our website's called totallychoice.com, but the company's Choice Provisions. We're working on Runner 3 right now, which is our current project. But in terms of Whoa Dave is, I guess, pretty clearly a throwback arcade title. It's intended to be modeled and crafted after arcade games of that era, but I think more specifically obscure arcade games of that era. I grew up in arcades as a little kid, and I used to really get a kick out of playing the games that other people hadn't really heard of. So I grew up with playing a lot of really weird games, and I think I kind of tried to emulate that, not just the look of the game, but like the kind of that feeling of like, I just paid a quarter and I don't know what to do, and it's going to take me a few quarters to figure this out, because that's how I initially played video games when I was a kid, and there was something magical about that. And I kind of set out to do that with Whoa Dave. Whoa Dave is really it's a cliche term, but my love letter to old weird arcade games. I really just wanted to make a game that I thought would be fun for myself to play, with the hopes that other people would enjoy it too. That's essentially what it is.
Since you brought it up, what other games did you play back in those days that, you know, it kind of may have influenced you a little bit?
Good question. I had a ColecoVision when I was a kid. I still do, but that was like the first real video game that I had exposure to, like long exposure to. And the interesting thing about the ColecoVision, I think what turned me on to weird arcade games, is that the ColecoVision, not to get into a history lesson here, but the ColecoVision, their business was licensing obscure arcade games for home ports, because they didn't want to spend a ton of money on Pac-Mans and Space Invaders and things like that. They wanted to, you know, try to spend the least amount of money on licensing fees. So they ended up licensing a lot of these, or getting the licenses for very obscure arcade games. You had things like Ladybug and Frenzy and Space Panic and Space Fury and all kinds of really weird arcade games that really never took off. And I played all of those when I was a kid. And I think a lot of those games are what inspired me. Particularly, there was a game called Space Panic that I really liked a lot, and I took some cues from that game when I developed Whoa Dave. And in Space Panic, you've got green aliens and red aliens and blue aliens, and if you fail to kill them in, you know, a certain amount of time in the proper way, they evolve and they change color and they get more difficult to kill. And that is a direct inspiration in Whoa Dave. And then, of course, you know, obviously there's Mario Brothers in there. You know, that's like part of the joke of the Whoa block that comes down. So there's a lot of like Mario Brothers influence games like Bubble Bobble. I'd say Space Panic, Mario Brothers, Bubble Bobble, games like that. Those really were the kinds of games that I played and went back to when I was developing Dave as kind of as a reference and, you know, for inspiration, so.
the part with the when the aliens, oh, are they aliens? That's what they are.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
When they go down and they evolve.
Yeah.
If you kill the evolution of that monster, you get more coins, right?
That's right.
Have you ever heard of this? There's a math problem. Well, I wouldn't even say a problem. There's a game, a math game, and it has the same scheme with the colors as well, with like the red, the blue, the green, and so on. And it's like if you have coins, if you have like just to make the game simple, if you have 6 buckets. And you have a coin in each bucket.
Okay.
And the rule of the game is you have to pay $1 to play the game. That's one. And the other one is you could take any penny out of any bucket that you like and give it to the person who you're paying the dollar to. And they will give you back 2 pennies. And you'll have to place it in the bucket to the right.
Okay.
Right. So you can't move the buckets around or anything like that. And there's a game like that. And if you twist the rules a little bit, so on and so forth, you can maximize the amount of money you can make. It's possible to seem like you might be making money, but you're really losing money overall.
Right.
Right. And like when I was playing Whoa Dave, I don't know, that hit me. I made a connection there and I was like, It's a gambling system almost.
What you're talking about is classic risk and reward game mechanics, and that's exactly what Lodave is very heavily built on, is just classic risk and reward. That's a major part of the game for sure. You know, you want to let the screen populate. You can just sort of move off to the side and stay out of trouble. Just let the screen go crazy and wait for a low block or go in for an attack. I mean, there's a lot of ways to play it. And, you know, we've watched people build strategy that we never knew was in there. You know, I think when I initially developed the game, I didn't realize that these things could be done or that people would do a lot of these things. It's very heavily risk and reward. And what you're talking about with the coins and everything in the buckets, it sounds like it's a gamble, but it's a calculated gamble.
Yeah.
You know, if you and it's in your skill, then you know you're doing it, the gamble is a little less. So it's totally.
Yeah, and you know, I found what every great piece of work, may it be a book, a movie, what have you, you always find even the author can tell all the different connections that could be made. And, you know, like I find, especially what you just said, I see that true with this game as well, right? Like you created a system and the system is just really well built. It's a really well built system. To be honest with you, the first time I played this game, I played it for like 2 seconds and then I kind of put it down. I'm like, no, I'm probably not going to pick it up again. And I probably didn't for a long, long time.
Yeah. Man.
I don't know what made me go back to the game, but I went back.
Yeah, I mean, that's very common. We get a lot of people that said that they hated the game at first, and it's okay. It's okay. Like, you know, it looks very crusty, and there's not a lot going on when you first pick up the game and play, and I realize that, and I think releasing this game was a little risky in that way, where we were just like, you know, this is not going to click with everybody, and I understand that. But if you give it a chance, the game opens up like a flower and you're just all, wow, look at everything going on in here. And I mean, I don't want to get on a high horse about it. Cause I'm very grateful that anybody played the game at all, really. I mean, and there's so many great games out there and I'm just thrilled that anybody played Whoa Dave at all. But you know, I feel like it's the kind of game that if you spend time with, and if you're patient with, then you will find the fun in the game, but it takes a couple minutes for that to open up and for that to reveal itself. But we had a lot of people that were the same way, that didn't, you know, they saw it in a trailer or they saw PlayStation and announced it as a free title on PS Plus, and they were like outraged that, you know, this was the monthly title, this thing, it looks like a Atari 2600 game, and you know, and people were just like, I don't, you know, kind of just wrote it off. But that's all right, you know, because a lot of people had a good time with it. So, you know, I'm pretty happy about that. Yeah.
Good. Was there any reason that you chose eggs or pennies?
Yes. Hmm. So the reason I picked, the reason that they're eggs is because I wanted there needed to be time before you had an enemy. You had to say, here, there will be an enemy here if you don't do something about it. So I figured they'll hatch out of eggs because they're harmless when they're eggs, but they also needed to be an object that you could pick up and handle and move around the screen and throw it around the screen and everything else. So, I mean, I picked an egg as the container for the enemy that was harmless in and of itself for a limited time. So that's why there's that egg and hatching mechanic in the game. The pennies was actually a really conscious decision from the very early development of the game, because since World Dave is a score chasing game, I wanted to make a game where the score was super important. That was the whole point of the game, and you would remember what your score was. And money is a really easy thing to remember, I think, for people's brains. You know, you remember how much things cost. It's easy to remember, you know, that thing was $2.99. You know, oh, they had that thing at the store, it was $29.99. It's very easy to remember these things. So I wanted the scores to be small. I didn't want like billions, you know, like pinball scores. I wanted really small scores where you could, everyone wears their score as like a badge. It's like, you know, -$4.90 is the best I've ever got. It's easy to remember that. And with coins, they're pennies really. And it's so incremental and so small. And so, and then at the end of the game, once you've, you know, you look at your score, it's just something that's easy to remember. So that's really the reason why it was coins, specifically their pennies really. Mm-hmm. So that was the whole reasoning behind that. I wanted the scores to be small enough to remember.
Yeah.
For each to remember.
Makes complete sense. I never understood why some games such as you know, the early versions of Tetris on the Game Boy had these scores when the lines that you cleared could have easily been scores.
Yeah.
And Pac-Man, I, you know, of course, I understand the scores, but
yeah, I mean, the thing with Pac-Man is that there are stages in Pac-Man,
right?
So you have other things to keep track of, and you know, you can say, well, I got to stage 100, you know, and that's a big deal. And Tetris, I think, has its own things too that kind of, you know, make it work. I mean, Tetris is just legendary in and of itself, so it's like they don't. That's just automatically like anything they did just automatically worked for them. But WoDave doesn't have stages. There's no break. Yeah. There's no end of a level. You just start playing the game until you die. And, you know, that's, I think it was necessary for us.
What inspired the changing of the background?
I wanted, well, since there were no stages, I wanted to give people some kind of a visual markers to say, like, you broke some kind of a barrier. And they're not random. They are based on your score. The music also goes along with the backgrounds. So the music and the backgrounds progress based on your score. I just wanted there to be some visual progression for your eye, because the background is so simple that I wanted to do something with it that grew. And I give credit to the BitTrip series, you know, BitTrip Beat, Core, Runner, all those games, which our company developed. That wasn't my idea, the progressing backgrounds of music. That was the work of the initial founders of the company, Mike and Alex and Chris. But I took a cue from that, and I figured, well, that did something for me. There was a drama to that. You know, I really like that feeling of being on a roll and feeling like you're on a roll in the game, helping you feel like you're on a roll. And I feel like that's really well done in the BitTrip series through music and visuals, the growth of those things. And I really wanted to do that in WoDave, because you get excited. You're just like, I'm doing really well. Like, you know, it's like watching a movie, and when the action picks up, the music picks up. And I wanted that. I wanted those things to correlate So yeah, that's kind of why that happens. Yeah.
You worked on the first bit trip?
I did not work. That is? The first bit trips, like, was collaborating a little bit on the fifth one. And I, at that time during the original bit trip series, I was friends with the guys at who were then called Gaijin Games, and we were close friends. And I started developing iOS games like 2010, maybe 9 or 10. And I didn't have, I was doing it completely independent. Now that's when I was working in New York City, doing something game related, but, the games I was doing was independent on my own time, and I didn't have a publisher. So I was talking to the Gaijin Games guys, and they published a couple of the games that I had done independently. And then we just started talking, and I wasn't completely satisfied with the work I was doing full time. And at that time, Runner 2 they just started talking about Runner 2 at that time. And I was brought on board to work on Runner 2. So I worked on Runner 2. That's really the first game that I worked on with Choice Provisions, was that game. Woe Dave and a few other games were developed after Runner 2. We kind of had this little branch of the company called Minivisions. And the purpose of Minivisions was to kind of keep games coming out that were smaller, that had smaller dev cycles and smaller budgets, that we could make a little bit more quickly. They're good quality games, mm-hmm. just small scope games, so right. that we'd go 3 years without making a game, because we're a very small team. Mm-hmm. We had like Runner 2, and then like years later, you know, we had Laser Life and Tharsis. And now we're working on Runner 3, but those games are years apart. So we wanted to do something to kind of fill in the gaps, to keep ourselves creative, to keep, you know, fans engaged, and to just have fun, really.
Any other titles you that you might be working on that you want to talk about?
Well, so we have a sequel to Woe Dave in the works called Space Dave.
Yeah, I know. I saw.
Yeah, and it's very close to being done, but we ran into some technical issues with it. Some things that we just kind of wanted to go back and revisit, and you know, repolish and. We wanted to really make sure it was right. So we kind of put off releasing Space Dave for now. It's not gone. It's not dead. It's still in the works. But, you know, Runner 3 came along, and we're well into development on Runner 3. So it's like we're still doing Space Dave, but the majority of our time is spent doing Runner 3 work, and I'm working on Runner 3. I'm doing a lot of different things on Runner 3 myself, so... You know, we're figuring that out on how we're going to get Space Dave finished. But it will be. It's a great game. It's really fun. I think it's a really worthy successor to Woe Dave, albeit a really, really different game. Mm. We're working.
Do you know if the price point will be about the same as Woe Dave?
It could be a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But we're not talking like a lot, but we really don't know yet.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to say.
Yeah. Because one thing that surprised me was, you know, I got Woe Dave for free, you know what I mean, for free, you know, from whatever means. And, sure. So I had no idea cost. That wasn't a thing in my mind. And, when I realized how much Woe Dave cost, I was like, whoa, like this is a bargain.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I mean, it sold for $4.99, I think. So Space Dave, it's not going to be any more than $9.99 if it's that.
Right.
And we don't know yet. It depends on a lot of things. Right. You know, it's all economy. And I mean, fortunately making games is business, and that's the part that sucks. Right. But,
What's your high score in Woe Dave?
Let's see. It's not very high. It's only a little above $5. I think it's about $5 and I want to say $5.40, which is not a super great score. Not compared to what others have done on that game. I mean, there are scores up into the, like, $60.
Yeah, that's insane.
30s, 60s. Wow. I'm definitely not a great WoDave player. I mean, I hold my own.
Do you have any strategy that you use personally?
I think the strategies that I use are the ones that everyone who's a good WoDave player uses. I don't have anything special. I didn't discover anything that other people, you know, haven't discovered. I like to, what I call, farm the aliens on the sides, which everyone does. Mm. With the two top platforms, you throw everything against the wall.
Yeah.
Build them all up there, throw in a skull, decimate everything, you know, go in, get the coins. And then you lose control. But some people know how to keep it up. I tend to fall apart. But that's kind of all I do, really. You know, I've played the game so much and so long that really I don't know if I have a strategy as much as I just know the controls so well and
right.
I'm able to just move around nimbly, I suppose, but that's about it.
There's a saying that, man, I forgot the saying. it's the shoe repair guy wears the worst shoe or something like that, something along those lines.
Yeah, definitely. I know exactly what you mean. We were talking about something like that today. It's, the more video games you make, the harder it is to play video games. I think. And it might not actually be true. It might just be that the older you get.
I was just going to say that. That's true, yeah. Too.
Yeah, it's, you know, I have a family now, and it's like it gets harder and harder.
Sure.
To really dig into video games. As much as I still love them, you know.
Yeah.
Appreciate them. It's like going to an art gallery. Yeah. It's kind of what it is. That's kind of what it's like for me now.
Yeah. You know? I'll have to say the same here as well.
Yeah. Well, I like to appreciate them. I'm not sure I want to sink 80 hours into Skyrim anymore.
Yeah. Right. Were there any previous iterations of the game? Like maybe like a flash version, you know?
Yeah. That's exactly, there exactly was a flash version of the game early on. I used to prototype before Unity. I used to do a lot of my prototyping in Flash. Mm. I don't use it anymore. But in those days, which aren't really that long ago, it was only about 4 years ago, I would prototype in Flash because I could do it very rapidly and on my own. Mm. So, there are earlier versions of the game. There are some old prototypes of the game. They're not that different. In fact, there's a little secret. There's a lot of screenshots of the game that are actually officially used that are actually from the prototype. You can't tell though. Only like the most sharp eye would pick out some of the differences. Like one of the high score tag, I think on the player one side, in the retail final version of WoDave, it cycles through colors. Like once you've hit the high score, the colors change. They kind of through. Mm. But in the prototype, it was a rainbow of bars that would.
Oh.
And so if you see screenshots where there's like rainbow bars going through the score, that's from the prototype of the game. But other than that, I mean, there's really early iterations of the game that just aren't really even WoDave. Mm. They're just totally different, you know. Some of the early prototypes, when I was trying to figure out what this game was, the mechanics were completely different, totally different. The game wasn't anything like WoDave. Hmm. So it's hard to say, is that really a prototype of WoDave? I guess so, you know, but it was really a different game. So,
Interesting. How different are we talking about?
One of the working titles of the very earliest versions I made was called UTUT, UTUT. And the reason it was called spelled UTUT, was because they weren't aliens. They were these objects that would fall from the sky. And there were three of them, I think. And one of them was shaped like the letter U, but with sharp corners. And the other piece was shaped like a letter T. And what you would do is you'd pick up a U, and then you'd pick up a T, and then they would go together and form a square. The T would go inside the U. And then once you built that square, then Dave would throw those objects that he built at creatures. And it was tedious, and it was slow, and it was frustrating, because it wasn't a lot of fun to have to build an effective weapon when the game was asking to be so fast. So I abandoned that idea, and I think I just said, and you could pick up anything and use it as a weapon. But then the problem with that, and that lended, you know, that had its own problems. So I just basically said, well, you know, it kind of became this weird game of rock, you know, rock, paper, scissors, mm-hmm. where it was like, you know, skull beats, egg beats, alien kind of a thing.
I see.
You know, it just sort of kind of went from there. But that's kind of how it got built over time.
Interesting.
But it was really quick. It was only, to get the initial concept, it was like a couple weeks of experimentation. You know, I would just go at it like 12, 13 hours a day, just playing and playing and coming up with whatever.
Yeah.
Just changing stuff. And that was a nice thing about iterating and, you know, an easy thing like Flash, because if you change your mind, you just go in and do it quick. So
that's amazing how quickly these things can be done now.
Well, a game like WoW Days is small. It's a small, simple game.
Yeah, but still in general, I've been... did you see... I mean, I'm not a programmer. I'm not really into these things, but I ended up seeing this video from the creator of Braid.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
on how to prototype. Did you see that video? Yeah, and it was really weird seeing how he thought about things, and interesting, but weird, but interesting, and how the prototypes were really very different. Like, he created a pool game, and from a billiards game, and from that turned out to help him out with Braid.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like just a quick program, but still.
It's the beauty of iterating. Rapid iterating is just, it's like, I mean, this is what we're taught as kids. You know, I think all children are game designers. It's just that you're usually shooed away from that as you get older, you know, but all kids are game designers, and you have a bucket of blocks and some marbles, and you'll figure out something to do with that. And I think being a game designer as an adult is really the same thing. You just give you make a sandbox for yourself, and you need to say, I want to work with these four things, and then you just sort of build it out from there. Nintendo, they're the masters of this. I mean, everyone goes around talking about how great Nintendo is, and that's nothing new, and that doesn't change the fact that it's true. And if you look at a Mario game, it's kind of the same. They have like five or six things in there, and they're just very clever with how they arrange them, you know. I think that's just good game design.
When did you realize that the levels that you created were just right? And to attach to that as well. So I only play on one level because the other levels are difficult. And I stick to that one level. I'm still trying to master that first level. So like, well, when did you realize like it was good? What helped you differentiate the levels?
I'll tell you the truth. I don't know if I've ever really felt like they were just right. Especially the second, the additions, because if you got into WoDave recently, then you're playing WoDave Deluxe, the original WoDave. There were Deluxe when it was originally released. It was only the first level with the pink floors. The second and third levels, I was always unsure of, and I still am, because there's just other stuff going on, and the more stuff you introduce, the less confident you are in whether it all works. I mean, it got to a point where, you know, I just let other people play it. And they were like, this is fun, this is good. And I just was like, okay, you know, if you guys feel like it's good, then I feel like it's good, then that's good enough. But the first level, I don't know, that's my favorite, because I feel like it's just simple, and it's got the right amount of, I think, you know what it is? I think it forces you to move in a triangle. There's a certain master triangle that kind of goes in the center, and you spend a lot of time on this 3-point triangle, and three is a nice number.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that with these 3 points, you're here, and you're here. You're protecting that platform, the fall away platforms. You got that one, and then the middle is your safe spot, kind of. as everything kind of goes there. So I think, and it wasn't me who realized that it was a triangle. I mean, I built the levels, but Mike is one of the guys here, and Mike said, you know, you've got this triangle. That's really good. It feels really good. And Dave wants to stay on this triangle in the level. And I think when Mike realized that there was like that triangle thing going on, I think that's when we started to feel like we didn't want to change it anymore. We just wanted to keep it where it was. I don't know, like, when you say, like, yeah, that's definitely, I mean, some people do, but yeah. I'm not sure I ever had a point where I was like, this is great, this is perfect. I don't think I ever said that.
Wow, you stumbled upon the perfect formula, it seems like.
I think it works. I mean, I think there's other things going on in there that help it. It just feels good. I mean, yeah, sometimes
it absolutely does.
There's a new term going around that people say game feel, like, you know, it's like a whole new, when they talk about game design, I got to a point where there was a game feel to the way that you moved around that board that felt good. It felt fast, like you were constantly moving. You weren't getting hindered. And once it feels like that, then it's good.
So, was there any big hurdle that you had to overcome when you were making this game?
Yes. The big one was that strategy I talked about, where you were farming everything onto the sides. It started out being fun, and it started out being a fun strategy, but then I realized that it was becoming an exploit. And some of our well-known game designer friends who have developed some very notable games, far better designers than I am, started playing the game and noted, they're like, this was a cool strategy until I realized that, like, I can just, I might be gaming the system. So that, when I realized that they were right, I was like, oh man, yeah, people are going to game the system. I thought about, well, how do I gracefully keep them from gaming the system where it doesn't feel like I just... When you find that exploit, you have to have a graceful out. You have to have something graceful that doesn't just feel cheap. Like, all of a sudden, now it's not there anymore. You know, just for no reason, it's gone. I was like, I wanted to do something that, if you were really, really good, skill-wise, then you could keep gaming the system, but you had to earn that privilege. You had to be really good at the game. But if you were really, really good at it skill-wise, then I you would be allowed to keep gaming that system. And the way that I ended up solving, I solved it, was the UFOs that come out of the bottom of the ground at around 100 coins or so score. And what they do is they go for those platforms and they attack them and they try to knock them down, because once those platforms get knocked down, it's a whole different game. You really have to scramble, and the safe spots are essentially gone, but you can kill the UFOs. So it's like, if you're really good, you can fend off that attack. So then it kind of just becomes like this defense thing where you want to protect those areas of the screen. And I think once I added those in, I felt pretty good that I had solved that problem. And then the other thing, one of the other designers told me was, they're like, you know, I've gotten good at the game, and it takes so long to get the beginning of the game to get to the franticness. Like, I want to get there. So we added the bonkers mode, the hard mode, where you could just start right at essentially, which was 150 coins. You'd start the game at. You start with 0 coins, but you start at the difficulty of 150.
Right,
so I think those are the two hurdles that I had to overcome, was to let the player start at a crazy moment in the game if they wanted to, and then somehow get rid of that exploit.
Are you the only developer?
I developed the initial game myself, and the console versions were coded, you know, porting and everything was done by another guy, Adam Rippon, that we work with, and he did the console ports. But yeah, the initial game is pretty much pretty much me.
Did you do like the pixel art and everything? Wait, does it use pixels? Is it pixel art?
Really. I mean, okay. Everything's pixels. It's not true pixel art. Okay. It's silly and simple on purpose. You know, right. We just want to make it look crusty on purpose. You know, that was like we like silly, you know what I mean here? So that was, we were just like, let's just make it all blocky and ridiculous looking. So we did.
So the music.
Yes.
Who's the music by?
That's me.
That's you? Really? Okay.
Yeah.
It's simple, but nice. I always like to ask about the music.
Yeah, no, that's my music as well. I'm not a trained musician or anything, but I like to dabble.
Did you go to school for programming or game design or anything like that?
Did not, no. I took one programming class my entire educational career, and it was a Pascal class, and I failed. I actually got an F. I got a D in algebra in high school. I'm not super great with that stuff. It's just the way I'm wired. So I was a graphic design student in college. That was my major. I always wanted to be a game designer, but I grew up in Connecticut, and there was like, especially back then, there was like, there's nothing. I mean, there's no industry, there's no classes. So I just kind of figured, I'm not going to work in games. Who am I kidding? I'm here. I'll just do graphic design. I get to make fun pictures digitally and do stuff like that. That's good enough for me. And I did that for a while, and then, you know, started teaching myself programming. It was just more of a hobby. Like, I wanted to do my own indie games, you know, I wanted to, that seemed glamorous to me. So I was like, Now, I had always kind of messed around in programming since I was a little kid. I had a Commodore 64 and, you know, like a Tandy computer, like a TRS-80 or something like that. And, you know, I coded BASIC and QBASIC and things like that.
I did QBASIC too.
Yeah, that's all I knew. And I taught myself that. I just, you know, download stuff off my modem or whatever and just study the code. Change the code, you know. So everything that I, any basis I had in programming was just from that. And, you know, Flash came out and I learned sort of object-oriented stuff, you know, ActionScript 3 kind of is a decent programming language. Then I picked up C#. I dabble in a little bit of Lua script now, which is similar to ActionScript 3. So I just taught myself, really. Yeah. So
if you had to give one tip to someone, and I'm really asking this because, you know, I'm thinking about my students in the back of my mind. If you had to give one tip to someone who might want to get into the field, what would it be?
Make a game. Make a game that works and that you can show people. Because nobody will listen to you if you only have ideas. And that's not me being smug or, you know, being dismissive of smart, creative people, because I feel bad about that. But that's the truth, you know. People will listen to you when you've got something to show them and to try. And you can make a simple game. Rodave is a simple game. I mean, you can make a simple game. There are great tools out there now that don't require you have a deep knowledge of programming to get something functional and working. You know, Unity, there's things like Game Maker, or I don't know anything about Game Maker, but I know that there are tools out there that make it easier for people who are just starting out to actually make something real and tangible that they can show someone. So that is the best tip that I can give anyone, because if you want to get into the industry and you don't plan on working for yourself, you're going to need to convince someone to hire you. And there are a few jobs in the game industry that where you know, just having a nice story is enough to qualify you. I definitely would say try to make something, even if it's like Pong, You know, even if it's like Breakout, to something, you know, because there are jobs out there for people that are starting out. And if you can say like, look, I'm just starting out, I made Pong and Breakout, but I added this fun little thing to it, but I really want to learn and I'll start off as a tester. I've been asked that question before and the answer is always the same. Try to make something that works.
So any favorite hidden retro games from back in the days that you personally like, you would recommend to someone, but most people wouldn't really know about?
Yeah, that sounds good. That's a really good question. There are a lot. There's so many.
Right.
There's so many that the only way I'm going to be able to answer this question is to just think of some stuff I've played recently that I've been having fun with. There's a game that I talked about my ColecoVision days, and there was a game on there that I liked a lot, and it did so many interesting things, and it was this game called Frenzy. And Frenzy was a sequel to a game that more people know about called Berserk. Mm. And Berserk, a lot of people have seen. It's got the little bouncing happy face ball, and it talked and everything, and you're a little guy and you run through a maze and shoot the robots and stuff. But Frenzy did some really neat stuff, very innovative things. And the ColecoVision version in particular is very interesting because they added music to it, and the arcade version didn't have any. And the music that they added to Frenzy is actually broken up pieces of Igor Stravinsky, who's a classical musician, called Rite of Spring. And it's a really creepy, bizarre piece of classical music. Look it up sometime. It's called Rite of Spring by Igor Stravinsky. And it's super, super bizarre music. And in just a little background on that music, when they first performed it live, there was like a riot. Like people were, like, I don't know what would make you want to freak out for music, but there was like a riot because of how ridiculous and insane people thought this music was. So they took pieces of this music, this one big giant classical piece, and they took little, I don't know if they're called movements or what, but they took bits of the music and dispersed it all throughout the game. So each room you go into, there are some special rooms that you go into, and they'll play like one part of the song. With the game over screen is another part of the song. And the music is so bizarre. You're just all, this is just wacky computer music, but it's not. It's all based on this really amazing classical music. And it's such a great atmosphere. But the game mechanics itself, they do some really cool things where the walls are destructible walls. So in some cases you're trapped. They'll throw you in a room and you're just trapped and there's robots closing in on you. You have to blast the walls away to make an exit to get out. You know, there are some rooms that have a special object in the center. You can shoot at that thing and it has a different or special effect on the enemies in the room. And some of them will stop moving. Some of them will just start rapidly blowing up. Some of them, you know, like if you kill the little bouncing ball guy, it goes nuts and sends out a bunch of dudes at you that you can't avoid. Like it does a lot of really weird, fun, bizarre things. And the music is creepy and it's a lot of fun. So that's a good one.
Check that out for sure.
Yeah, it's fun. Play the ColecoVision version of it though. If you play it, the arcade one is a little drier. Mm. You need it doesn't have any music, but it talks. So there's a trade-off. The other one that I really like a lot is this game called Zookeeper, and it's not they made a newer game called Zookeeper.
I was about to say that. Yeah.
It's not. This is an old Taito game, and you literally run around this cage of animals that's in the center of the screen, and as you run, under your feet bricks are put in, and you're basically building a wall to keep the animals in, and the animals will ram up against the wall and break the bricks down. So if they make a hole, you got to get back over there and fill the hole in, because if the animals get out, they run along the top of the wall and they chase you, and you need to avoid them. And you can jump, and the jump is ultra bizarre and really long and floaty and extended. So since you're running along the perimeter of a rectangle, if you jump here, you'll jump and you'll hook around the other side of the rectangle. And then there's like an invincibility net, so you can catch the net. And every board is on a timer, and you have 30 seconds or 60 seconds per board. And it shows you the timer, it's visualized, and along the timer, there are these little breaks where there's like a bonus object and then like an invincibility thing. And then, there's like one of them's a beer or something. And as it hits, the timer goes down and hits these objects, one of them will appear on the screen. You catch it for points, and it's very frantic and nuts and weird. And I just really like it a lot. Yeah, there are so many, but those are the two that I think I played recently that just kind of stuck out as ones I had a lot of fun with.
Could you name any current indie games that you know,
yeah,
along the same lines?
One of my favorites, current indie games right now, is Downwell.
Oh yeah, okay. I recently bought that one.
That's just fantastic, really, really great game. I'm a big fan of Downwell. Oh, there's one really great iOS game. It's kind of like Downwell. It's Downwell-esque, but it's also really super different. But it's called Tomb of the Mask, I think it's called. It's really, really good. I was just hooked on this game maybe 4 or 5 months ago. And couldn't stop playing it. It was just so, so, so good. Frantic and fast, and you really get in a zone when you play that game. And I like indie games where they force you to, like, they put you in that zone where you can't look away, you can't talk to somebody else while you play it. Super arcadey, super frantic.
Only because you told me about those games, and I kind of felt out your style a little bit now. I recommend to try this new game. Like, it literally just got released. Nobody knows about it. Switch and Shoot. It puts you in that game zone. It's not on iOS though. It's on Android, or it's also on Steam.
Yeah, yeah. Switch Shoot.
Switch and Shoot.
Switch and Shoot. Yeah. Okay.
It's like a shoot 'em up playing game, but it puts you in that same type of zone that those other games put you in. So my final question.
Yeah.
What do you think about the Nintendo Switch, and would WoDave come to it?
I don't know if WoDave will come to it. SpaceDave, though, that's a pretty good possibility. What do I think about it? It's really interesting. I mean, I think that it's a logical progression for Nintendo. And I have to admit, a year ago, I predicted that the next console would be the Wii U reverse, is what I said. And I kind of feel like it is. And so, because now the Wii U, the thing you hold in your hand, really has no brain.
Right.
It's really just a receiver. And I think now this thing is the brain.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing that's hooked up to your TV is just the receiver, essentially. Because I don't think there's any processor. I doubt there is. So, I mean, I think it's a logical progression, logical evolution for Nintendo. And I think it's not a gimmick. And the reason I think that is because they're offering you a very, very, their value proposal is very, very logical. What they're saying is, you know, we're going to give you a handheld and a home console and a party console all in one. Like, this is very, I think it's practical, it's valuable, it makes a lot of sense. It's not, I think people throw that every time Nintendo announces anything, like, oh, it's the next gimmick. I don't think people really know what a gimmick is. This isn't a gimmick. This is like, it's like buying a car with like great features in it. You know, it's like, oh, that's great, that's useful, I'm going to use that. Like, that's really great. You mean I don't have to buy handheld, and I don't have to buy a home console, and I don't have to buy an extra controller for my buddy when we're playing on while it's on a kickstand, it's a party console. It's like, yeah, you get all those really functional things. Like, that's real functional stuff that people use. Like, we play handheld games, we play TV console games, we play party games. Yeah. And this is just, like, that's not a gimmick. They're saying, okay, we know what you want. We're giving you this all-in-one thing that can do all that stuff. The funny thing is it's almost like this, it's like maybe like the most non-gimmicky grown-up console I think Nintendo's made, because it really looks at what people want and it says, okay, we're going to answer that all in, you know, in one package. And I think that was almost like a little sobering in a way, you know, because I didn't get all like, oh my god, this is so cool, so giddy, and like, you know, look at the Wii where I'm swinging things around. Like, that was like, this is going to be crazy. This doesn't, it's just like, okay, that's, it's like, that makes sense. Like, that's a sensible decision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's when you get older, you make sensible decisions.
Right.
Like, it's almost like Nintendo's been like, we're going to make a sensible console now. This is sensible. And that's like the impression I get from it, is that it's very sensible.
Yeah.
But it looks great. I mean, it looks cool. And we're certainly going to develop for it. And yeah, I guess that's all I can say about that.
Thank you so much again for your time.
My pleasure.
If there's anything else you want to say to anybody that might be listening, this is the time.
I hope you check out Whoa Dave after watching this if you haven't tried it yet. Give it more than 5 minutes is all. That's usually what I like to tell people. Yeah. Just give it a few minutes. I know it starts out slow and it looks like a 35-year-old video game, but just give it a little time. That might be what I'd like to say. And then check out our Runner 3 development. We're you know, this is the new thing that we're working on, and I'm very, very deep in development on it. Runner3.game is actually the URL. It's a weird URL, but we have a devlog there, and we're talking about what we're doing, and I've got a post on about a week ago about my specific job on it. I've got a Twitter account you can follow me on. It's Robotube. TotallyChoice.com is our website. I guess that's it.
All right. Again, thank you so much for this time.
My pleasure. Sweet.